A faded Yiddish book sits in the British Library, its pages yellowed with secrets. Inside, stories pulse with a truth so startling, it rewrites everything we thought we knew about the Holocaust. Young Jewish women, teenagers really, smuggling dynamite and potato sacks, firing pistols with both hands, commanding partisan units through frozen forests. These weren't victims waiting for rescue. They were architects of resistance, and history nearly forgot them entirely. We've seen the films, read the textbooks. The Holocaust narrative typically centers on suffering and survival, with rescue coming from outside. But what if I told you that over 90 ghettos mounted armed resistance, that 30,000 Jews fought as forest partisans, that women formed the backbone of these networks, yet their stories vanished from collective memory? This erasure wasn't accidental. It was systematic, shaped by Cold War politics, gender bias, and the discomfort of imagining victims as warriors. Picture Jędrzejów, Poland, 1938. Nearly half the town is Jewish. Rania Kukielka, 14, dreams of office work, practicing stenography while her older sister Sarah attends Meetings of Freedom, a labor Zionist youth movement. These weren't just social clubs. They were training grounds for revolution, teaching agricultural skills, self-defense, and radical ideas about gender equality that would seem progressive even today. These movements gave young Jews something precious, purpose in a world turning hostile. On September 1st, 1939, German tanks rolled into Chmielnik, killing a quarter of its population within hours. Renya's family hid in an attic, watching their world burn. The Nazis systematically targeted intellectuals, planting weapons to justify executions and forcing communities to witness public hangings. Bodies swung from Main Street trees, the town's peaceful artery slashed forever. Within months, the Kukielkas were forced into a Jewish neighborhood with 2 days to abandon everything. Renya and her sisters became smugglers, layering contraband under their coats and slipping through ghetto walls at night. While families scrambled to survive, Zivia Lubetkin made an incomprehensible choice. On New Year's Eve 1939, with safe passage to Palestine available, she crossed back into Nazi-occupied Poland. In Warsaw, where 375,000 Jews lived under terror, Zivia joined Frumpka Plotnicka, Die Mame, who had transformed Freedom Headquarters into a thriving commune. Together, they built survival infrastructure, soup kitchens feeding 600 daily, underground schools, training farms. Most revolutionary were their communication networks, using female couriers, Zivia's girls, with Aryan appearances, who became the resistance's lifeline, connecting scattered communities as disease and starvation ravaged the ghetto. Resistance in the Warsaw ghetto began in classrooms, not with weapons. Despite Nazi prohibitions, Freedom operated underground schools for 120 students, flying gymnasia that constantly moved to evade detection. 13 teachers taught Bible studies, mathematics, literature, and psychology without supplies, administering exams and awarding unofficial diplomas for 2 years. The organization ran 6 daycare centers, serving over 400 children daily, and supported 15 orphanages, housing 1,500 children. Isaac Myron's children's choir performed secret cellar concerts, drawing thousands with traditional Jewish songs and resistance anthems, cultural gatherings that doubled as information networks. When Nazis banned Jewish books, Freedom established clandestine publishing operations, producing over 30 works, historical anthologies, educational handbooks, plays, and underground newspapers. Survivor Rachel Auerbach captured it perfectly. "We had to show that we were still human beings with dignity. Every book read, every lesson taught, every song sung was an act of defiance." December 1941 brought undeniable truth. After 52,000 Jews vanished, Freedom established the Jewish Fighting Organization, ZAB, on July 28, 1942, with 2 pistols. Zivia, the only elected woman leader, learned firearms while cooking and maintaining morale. Tosia Altman, Frumka, and Leah slipped to the Aryan side to forge connections and procure weapons. Women became crucial smugglers, Tosia transporting guns in nail boxes, Frumka concealing weapons under potatoes, Vladka eventually smuggling dynamite.
May 1943, Renya joins the Kashoriot, Hebrew for connectors, female couriers who became the resistance's circulatory system. They smuggled news, fake IDs, money, and weapons between ghettos. Why women? Jewish men couldn't hide circumcision or travel without suspicion. Women's handbags became perfect weapons caches, and their feminine wiles, flirtatious smiles, feigned naivete, often disarmed Nazis. Only women who didn't look Semitic qualified, light hair, blue or green eyes. They dyed their hair, adopted Polish hairstyles, memorized Catholic prayers, replaced Jewish expressions with Polish ones. The psychological burden was crushing. They maintained fake smiles while carrying bullets in jam jars. As Chasia Bialika described it, "We were actors in a play that had no intermission, non-stop actresses." When Renya found work as a housekeeper for the half-German Hollander family, she attended church to maintain her Catholic disguise, meticulously mimicking movements during Mass. "I hadn't even known that I was such a good actor." Bella Hazan mastered the ultimate deception, working at the Gestapo office itself. After her Nazi boss helped her obtain rare train passes, Bella traveled to meet comrades, including Lunka Kozibrodska, another legendary courier with long blonde braids arranged like a halo. For Christmas 1941, Bella even hosted fellow couriers at her apartment after attending a Gestapo holiday party, a dangerous game played at the highest stakes. April 18, 1943. The night before Passover, Zivia learns Germans will attack at dawn. Since January's mini-uprising, the Zob has transformed, clearing collaborators, collecting funds, and building an arsenal from weapons bought from Poles and German soldiers, primitive bombs made from water pipes filled with explosives and nails, and Molotov cocktails. 22 fighting groups, about 500 fighters, one-third women, position themselves throughout the ghetto. When 2,000 Nazi soldiers with tanks march in on Passover morning, the Jews detonate mines under the main street. Fighters rain grenades and Molotov cocktails from strategic positions, blocking the Nazi advance with zero casualties. That night, makeshift Passover seders are held in bunkers. Polish radio announces, "The Jews of the ghetto are fighting with unparalleled courage." Nazi commander Jürgen Stroop described Jewish female fighters as not human, perhaps devils or goddesses, calm, nimble like circus performers, firing pistols in both hands. After suffering losses, he ordered killing them from a distance. When the ghetto fell, Zivia escaped through Warsaw's sewage system, a harrowing journey through neck-high excrement while carrying injured comrades. Reaching Lomianki Forest, she wept for the first time in years. By 1944, many fighters faced capture. Renya was arrested at a border crossing with forged documents. Despite brutal interrogation, beatings, hair-dragging, torture threats, she remained defiant. In Auschwitz, resistance persisted underground. Anna Heilmann, 14, worked at the Union factory producing detonators. Through an elaborate network, women collected matches, gasoline, and tools. Anna's sister Esther wrapped gunpowder in cloth, hiding it in garbage for Anna to smuggle under her dress. About 30 Jewish women risked their lives in this operation. On October 7, 1944, the Jewish underground attacked SS guards with improvised weapons, blew up a crematorium, and threw a sadistic Nazi into the oven alive. They cut through barbed wire and fled, but Nazis shot all 300 rebels. After months imprisoned, Renya received unexpected reprieve, assignment to the police kitchen where a sympathetic German gendarme agreed to mail a coded letter to Warsaw comrades. Renya's escape unfolded with heart-stopping tension. After swapping clothes with another prisoner, she joined a work group despite extreme weakness. When Sister Sarah appeared, Renya distracted the guard with liquor and cigarettes. The sisters changed clothes and fled, scaling barbed wire. Though collapsing repeatedly, Sarah's pleas kept Renya moving through 8 grueling miles. With Chaika Klinger and 6 others, she journeyed by train, then trekked 6 hours through snow-covered Tatra Mountains. On March 6, 1944, 19-year-old Rania Kukielka arrived in Haifa, Palestine, her most incredible crossing yet. Arriving in Palestine, Rania experienced both elation and disorientation. After rehabilitation at Kibbutz Dafna, she remained haunted. "We feel like we're smaller and weaker than the people around us." Without family networks or normal development, survivors struggled with identity and purpose. Zivia felt empty when Soviet tanks liberated Warsaw, the saddest day of her life as her world officially ceased to exist. Zivia and Antek founded the Ghetto Fighters House Kibbutz, building productive lives despite trauma. Zivia remained principled, tight with money, fiercely against German reconciliation. Her motto? Give yourself a slap on the ass. Not everyone survived surviving. Chaika Klinger reached Palestine but battled depression and mental illness. Despite starting a family, she found no outlet for her intellectual talents. After several hospitalizations, Chaika hung herself in April 1958, on the 15th anniversary of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. Rania embraced renewal with the motto, "It happened and it passed." She married, moved to Haifa, had two children, Yaakov and Leah, named after her murdered brother and mother. Though rarely speaking about the Holocaust, her children sensed the darkness beneath the books and joy that filled their home. Many female fighters lived remarkably long lives, Hela to 96, Vladka to 90, Vitka to 92. Rania remained vibrant into her 80s, passing in 2014, surrounded by family she cultivated from nothing, the new branches from a decapitated tree. These women's stories faded because many didn't survive, political factions competed for credit, and gender erased contributions as women documented others' heroism rather than their own. Yet their legacy lives through an estimated 25,000 descendants. These teenagers became warriors, intellectuals became smugglers, daughters became legends. They carried bullets in jam jars and hope in their hearts, surviving not just to live, but to ensure we would remember.